Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer. There's Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. I'm in New York. Padres, Mets, three games beginning tonight, Friday, as we tape this. Ryan, there's a lot to talk about, I guess. Where would you like to start?
I'd like to start with the sweep. Padres come off a three-game sweep with the A's. The last two wins were walk-off home runs in the ninth. Kyle Higashioka and then Jackson Merrill. At long last, Kevin, we're in the middle of June, but they finally swept somebody. I'm going to ask you a simple question that's really a complicated question. Why is it important that they sweep?
Because while it is true, and this is what you'll hear when a team doesn't sweep, it is true that winning series will give you a winning record. It will get you into the playoffs. Probably if you win every series, you're going to be a top seed. Mm-hmm. You're not going to win every series. You're not even going to come close to it. Most playoff teams, you've got a few five game win streaks at the least. Most have an 8, a 9, a 12 game, or you've won 9 of 10 or something like that, and you do that once, twice during the season, and that's how you build your 90-win season, your 100-win season. So sweeps keep win streaks going. Playoff teams have win streaks.
This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com. Yes, and I think it was important. I mean, there was a clubhouse meeting talking about this, but I think that it's important that they sweep in part to show themselves that they can sweep teams, right? I mean,
right. And I'm always reluctant, though I am the one that wrote about it. I'm always reluctant to talk about players getting together and talking. They do it more than we ever know, okay? But this team has had great communication from the get-go. Every player gives credit to Mike Schilt, also kind of a leadership council that they have, but also like important to show that, hey, we're not all talk. Hey, what we talked about here, the stuff we're going to do during games, before games, after games, our preparation, our mindset, we are going to do. Because as I wrote about last year, sometimes that wouldn't happen. Right? All these meetings, right? And big drama meetings. And this wasn't. This was a, hey, we lost five games in a row, five quality starts, five games by a total of six runs you lost. And as Xander Bogaerts, several people said, he called it a nice winning streak and or nice losing streak.
Losing streak.
And it was like the nicest. Didn't mean that in a good way, but meant it like, how did we lose those? And it's a great question since it had never been done that a team lost five games in a row in which it got a quality start and out hit their opponent in each of the games. So like they knew they were close. Hey, here's the little stuff we've got to do. And so there were a series of meetings and they have come out and they've won 5 of 6 since then. And they are on a three-game win streak as they start this series against another losing team.
Right. And just like we drew it up, Kevin, the Padres are being led by Kyle Higashioka, Jackson Merrill, and Donovan Solano, you know.
The power hitters, Donovan Solano and Jackson Merrill.
Real quick, we've talked about Solano a lot. We talked about him a lot. I believe it was in the last episode or the one before that. Let's talk a little bit about Merrill. Two home runs on Wednesday. Somebody, you know, the power seems like it's starting to come a little bit more. You know, after an early season slump, he's back at 279, OPS 700, which is like he's Babe Ruth compared to Trent Grisham. He talks about being back to doing some stuff that he was doing well in AA. What is that?
Being comfortable knowing that, hey, just like everybody, got to be ready for that fastball, but then got to be ready for this other stuff. Now I got to recognize it, got to know it's coming, got to, you know, and making that adjustment at the major league level is pretty rough. Like I thought it was unreal that you got a guy who can throw you 103. He throws a slider. Not sure why he did that first pitch, but he did it. And Jackson Merrill was ready for it, and he hit it just hard enough to get it out. I mean, you're a left-handed hitter. You're a pull hitter at Petco Park. That can play in your advantage. He is a elite adjuster, as Mike Schilt might say, for a rookie in particular. Just it's fun as a baseball fan to follow along with Jackson Merrill's growth.
Right. He is so easy to dream on, too. I mean, you watch him and you go, okay, well, as he gets older, you know, the power is usually the last thing that comes. You know, I'm not sure what position he plays 5 years from now. Not sure that necessarily matters. But, you know, just to see that he's holding his own here in mid-June and has helped the team win some games, I mean, the bar was set fairly low when you start a 20-year-old in center field on opening day. And yeah, that bar many times already.
Yeah, absolutely. It's I mean, it really is remarkable. And I'll tell you, I'd been talking to him for a few days, had talked to Victor Rodriguez for a few days about a lot of topics. But one of the things I talked to Victor about and certainly Jackson about was his power potential, and was going to write it when he was on that 6-game winning streak, right? Or 6-game hitting streak. And then he goes hitless, and there was a bunch of other stuff that happened, so I didn't write about it. Man, I could have really looked like a prophet. But I had all this stuff stored up for the newsletter after he had that 2-home run day. So, yeah, it was remarkable. But he is such a good hitter that he is that guy, a little bit like Tatis, where he is going to hit home runs just because he's a good hitter. Like trust that, because the home runs are going to come, and not everybody's like that.
No, you're right. You're right.
They say they are, but they're not.
But they're not. And again, you know, you mentioned Tatis. It's nice that Donovan Solano and Jackson Merrill are doing, but this team will only go as far as at least Tatis and Machado will take them. You had a great story in today's UT about Tatis. I mean, he said basically he's back to where he was when he was the best player in baseball for long stretches at a time. Where does this comfort level come from?
Doing the right things at the plate, having the right mindset at the plate. They somewhat play off each other. You know, just worked with his dad, got technically correct, and that coincided. And then obviously was a product that helped him to hit better. But when the results start coming, all of a sudden you just feel invincible. And that's true of every player. But Tati just kind of can ride the waves. And we need to remember like how good he was. No one had ever done what he did in his first, I'm using the number here because it was his first three seasons, 273 games. No one had ever had the combination of as high an average as he had. I think it was 291, as high an OPS as he had. I think it was 965, as many home runs as he had. I think it was 81, as many stolen bases as he had. I think it was 52. As a matter of fact, I'm reasonably certain. I can't remember. I saw this. I had someone do the research once on this because this would have taken me too long to be certain about it, that no one had ever even done three of those things, and only a couple had ever done two of those things. So in his first three seasons, like Tatis was on his way, like a statue contract might not have been enough, right? Like name a skyscraper after him, that kind of contract. Like, but then it's been a rough 3 years, right? Like, or 2 years because of various things that everyone knows about. And there just had to be some question about, and I'm not saying that he's now like, he's back. And like, as in like, he's going to hit like this forever, but he's back. He's that guy. And so now it's up to him. Like that guy, what does that mean? Does that mean the statue? Because that'll mean Hall of Fame, right? Like what Tatis, we can now say, okay, he's still that guy. Now it's up to him.
Right. Well, and wasn't that the big question surrounding him, at least as recently as last year, which was, you know, when there's a PED suspension on your record, when you've undergone surgery on two very important parts of your body, your shoulder and your wrist, would he ever be that guy again? And I don't think he's 100% there yet, but he's closer to there than he's been since what, the motorcycle accident?
Yeah, I mean, there you go. That's well put. Like, again, he is back. Right. But all that means is like, okay, he's capable of being that player. We can say that
now. Right. He said something that to me makes perfect sense. And I guess I just didn't think of it this way, was when he struggles and when he tries to make things happen, that's when things go sideways, right? He's swinging at balls outside the zone. He's getting froggy. He's getting out front a little bit more. And it just sort of snowballs from there.
He's the most, and look, I say it all the time because I want people to, if someone's never heard me, I want them to know what I think I am and what I think and what I know that I'm not. I'm not a coach or a scout, but right. Tatis is one of the easiest guys in the world to kind of telegraph that he's going into one of his slumps because it's the same kind of pitches and it's the stuff that you just talked about. Yes.
Right. 3-game series, Padres and Mets starting tonight in New York. Let's go through pitching matchups just a little bit. Game one, we've got Matt Waldron versus old friend Sean Manaea. Sean Manaea has not been bad. He's 3-3 with a 4.3 ERA, a 1.35 whip.
He's been terrible lately. You are correct. Right. Because Sean Manaea can be dominating and then he can be horrible. In his last two starts, he's been horrible.
Horrible. Yeah, he's interesting. When he was with the Padres, I'm not sure many people knew what to make of him. he was an innings eater on a team that desperately needed one, but he wasn't particularly good.
There were really good portions, and then there were really bad portions. Yes.
Right.
He was a godsend for that team, without a doubt. Yeah. That's a guy that had they made some better decisions and played a little better in Philadelphia, you look back and Sean Manaea is recalled fondly on a World Series team. Because he really did a lot for them that year. But yes, I can see that you wouldn't know what to make of him because you don't know. Like you see him as the guy who's facing the Padres tonight, left-hander, and you go, this could go really well for the Padres. Or Sean Manaea could be throwing that 91 up in the zone that looks like 98, and they can't touch him and because he can be nasty. So, yeah.
Yeah,
and Matt Waldman has been one of the top five pitchers in the league. I think it's a 1.7 something over, I don't know how many starts, but it was May 11th. So it's something like 6 or 7 starts. He has been, wow. And we've talked a lot about it, written a lot about it, but the confidence that he has in the pitch, his acceptance of the fact that he's a knuckleballer. I don't know what you think, Ryan, but like with the injuries that have happened to the top two guys, Cease being somewhat inconsistent. Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, Michael King, been very good. But if anyone expected this out of Matt Waldron, I mean, he's been a godsend. You want to talk about godsends. Matt Waldron, huge for the Padres this year.
Yeah, the story of the Padres season through 2.5 months is the performances that you're getting from guys where there were no expectations.
Indeed.
And if they end up making the playoffs, it's going to be because of what these guys did while their highest paid players and presumably best players either got healthy or got right.
Yep.
Matt Waldron's been a big part of that.
Speaking of what it takes. And that's why even though Manny Machado often gets into the spitting of cliches and all that stuff, and he tries to, he accuses us of having agendas. He has agendas of things he wants to put out there. But, he's spot on when he talks this year about how it's going to take everybody. Because guess what? It has. Right?
Yeah.
It has. They would not, with the way that they're 37-35 right now, it feels like the kind of period for a team. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen because that's why we watch the games, right? But it feels like potentially that time of the season when a good team does rise to 5 over, right? Then they're there for a bit. Boom. You look up next and they're 10 over. And boom, you look up next and now they're on their way and they got a 90 win season. That is what this feels like, is that time where, okay, this is where the Padres got it together.
This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com. Right, and it matters because the Giants are not that far behind them. The Diamondbacks are not that far behind them. It would be a good time for the Padres to get some separation. You're not going to catch the Dodgers. Nobody's going to catch the Dodgers. But if you can be firmly in second place heading into the All-Star break, then that's when you decide, hey, they're going all in. Or, hey, they're going to go address these holes that they have, right?
And I think that we're already to the point where the Padres have plans for the trade deadline. But you are correct. Yes. Like if things were to change drastically the other way before the All-Star game, right? Like then maybe they pull back on those plans, because there still is some convincing of Eric Kassenda and Eric Grubner, I believe, to probably be done of, hey, how much of this prospect capital are we willing? Because the asking prices for some of these players that the Padres are going after are really high, and they have a long-term plan of trying to, keep the payroll down with good players, good homegrown players. So I think there's still some maneuvering. So yes, you're absolutely right about that. Though I do think they already are going forward as if they are they're near the front of the line of buyers.
Yeah. And they need starting pitching. And, Adam Major pitches here in game two against Jose Quintana. Speaking of Jose Quintana and Sean Manaea, if this was 2019 or 2018, it'd be a formidable first two opponents here. Adam Major is coming off a really bad outing. To be expected, he's a rookie. He has an ERA of 9. To me, this is a position, that another bad outing might lead to maybe more urgency in that department. Am I speaking in code, Kevin?
Yeah, a little bit, but okay. I think you're right. And I do think there is anyway. It's like, listen, most of the time, the team is a step ahead of the rest of us, right? Yeah. Like we, after, if Adam Major, if it didn't go well tomorrow, we would be like, oh yeah, that was the start. And I can tell you that, like, no, they already kind of know that, like, he's probably gonna be back in AAA working on some stuff, right? Keep that fastball down, right? Like, you know, what did you take up here and learn about what hitters do and all that and sequencing and, you know, go work on that in AAA because they're gonna, you know, Darvish is coming back. Plus, I do believe they're gonna add. So, but you are, yes, you are spot. It feels like a big start for Adam Major.
Right. And then Sunday, you got Dylan Cease and Tyler McGill. Dylan Cease just is coming off his first win since May 8th, struck out 8 over 6 innings of one run ball against the A's. He has a 1 whip over the last 83 innings, which is pretty great. Just a guy who, again, consistency may be the last thing to come with him, but when he's good, he's very good.
Right. And I don't want to compare them. They're not like anything alike, but you talk about Sean Manaea and his role in 2022. I mean, one thing is Dylan Cease giving you 100 pitches and, you know, I mean, at the worst, 5 innings, but probably 6 and 6 plus when he goes out there. And that is huge. Yep. The way that I think Mike Schilt is very good at using the bullpen, mm-hmm. but they've also like been able to avoid with this, whatever it is now. They're in the middle of 26 and 27. This is the start of their third run of 13 games in 13 days in a row, as in they played 13 and 13, had a day off, 13 and 13, day off, 13 and 13. Like they are, and they have, I mean, the bullpen's been in, you know, a distress a couple times. I've been through seasons where that would have been like 7 call-ups would have happened in this span of 50 days. And that has not been the case. So kudos to Mike Schilt, but also when they've needed a guy, Michael King, to go 7, he gave him 7. Mm-hmm. Dylan Cease coming in every time, Waldron coming in every time. And so they've been very fortunate as well.
Right. Tyler McGill, big guy, was the Mets opening day starter a couple of years ago because of injuries. I know one thing, he's probably smart because he and I share an alma mater. But that's probably it. This segment is brought to you by Hamul Casino. Kick off summer at their annual block party on June 15th. It's a full day of free play, live music, free food, and more. Learn more at HamulCasinoSD.com. On every episode, Kevin, I try to put you on the spot here at the end. And let's do it again today. Rank food cities in the major leagues. Because you're a New York City. You could go any sort of different directions. Is it the best food city? And when you're in New York, what do you like to get?
Well, I stay out by the ballpark. When they play the Yankees, it's closer to downtown to Manhattan. And so I stay there because if you're going to go to New York, you might as well go and, you know, walk to get some coffee, walk to get some Chinese or some pizza at 2 a.m. Because you're, you know, whatever. Then, yeah. But I actually stay out in Queens. So I'm the most boring traveler there is. Food cities. Look, for variety and quality, this is right up there. Here's the thing about travel. Outside of Cincinnati, you can find good food, good bars anywhere. Like, and I will say this. Back when I was younger, some of my best times were in Cincinnati. And people are like, what? You can find good anywhere. Kansas City, I think I told you this, highly underrated for food. And that's not just barbecue. You can't beat it, but that is the best barbecue. But like a good Italian there. But you cannot beat New York. I mean, you just can't.
I think what you're trying to tell me is that you don't like Skyline Chili.
It's garbage. Garbage in, garbage out.
That's a good place to jump off. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast, Padres Mets 3-game series. Kevin, you were in New York, and we will talk on Monday when the Padres head to, is it Philadelphia? Play the best team in baseball?
Well, they are. They're really good. It's like, wow, I look forward to seeing them again. I don't know that they're as invincible as the last time the Padres played them. So I guess there's that.
Good. Yeah, maybe they can get out of the first inning without allowing a home run. So
But that offense, I think it's the deepest, and that rotation, and I haven't looked ahead, but you're going to see some good pitchers.
Right, which is, again, it reinforces the lesson. You got to beat bad teams. And I think the Mets are a bad team. So we'll see what happens this weekend. Padres, Mets, 3 games.
I was watching their game here last night. They played last night and a graphic came up and they're 30-37. And I forget exactly what the record was, but they were playing their finale against the Marlins. There's something, and they ended up winning on a walk-off, the Mets did. There's something like 17-8 or something in the final game of series. But the rest of the time, obviously like 20 below. Like they somehow have won the final game of the series almost every time, but they're not a good team.
Not a good team. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin, I'm Ryan. We'll see you next time.